SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Monday. Cheltenham fans, Sirius 219 XM 201, Sports Zone 964, listening to Sirius XM online and at the website, stevebick.com. We have to hop to it, literally. The hurdling and the chasing tomorrow through Friday at Cheltenham. In this first hour, we're going to get the overview. I want to slip it in here and get out ahead of it. So that particularly the Tuesday-Wednesday looks, you know, races beyond in the morning. We'll take a couple probably each day, including the granddaddy of them all, the Rose Bowl of of Cheltenham, the Gold Cup on Friday. But with it starting tomorrow, we're going to get Nick Luck in here in about 4 minutes, 9:05. We'll get Nick. Got a little window for him. And later, after Kenny McPeak is the sandwich filling in a Cheltenham sandwich, because after Kenny, who's on his way to OBS, another of the week's storylines, it's Louisiana Derby week, it's OBS, two-year-old in training sale, season kickoff tomorrow and Wednesday. Kenny's on his way there, so we'll talk to him in the car. Don't know if he's coming from north or if he's coming from Tampa or coming from Ocala, from Orlando. Several options. And then the long shot lad himself, Kev Humphreys. Kev will join us. He'll give you his Tuesday and Wednesday ideas. And have your pencil ready. All right? Let me give you a quick rundown and touch on just a couple of things before Nick joins us at 9:05. Rich Migliori, of course, top of hour two. We'll check in with Mig after the weekend that included, you know, not just what Rich and the team are doing based at Aqueduct, but, of course, the Oaklawn action on Saturday, and I'll explain the craziness over the television coverage Saturday. I've never seen anything like it. We'll address that in a second, but we'll get all of Rich's opinions, and I may surprise Rich by reaching down to Ocala and bringing his son Joseph in. Joe is down with his Migliori bloodstock and working with some clients, so maybe we can slip Joey in with Rich for a couple of minutes. Tom Amos, since it's Louisiana Derby week, we'll get a visit in with Tom. He pulled a very clever stunt, I got to tell you. that little Stitious, he took little Stitious, snuck her into Maryland, and won the Beyond the Wire stake on Saturday at Laurel. Those stakes were good at Laurel. In fact, also Turf Paradise on Friday night. That was fun. I watched second half of the card from Turf Paradise, which I can't remember doing, and watched all four stakes and a couple of particularly engaging results there. We'll get to that. But Amos will join us, talk about Little Stitious, and then we'll even get some preview from Tom for his four starters, all with Louis Saez, doing a lot of business with Louis and with Kieran McLaughlin. Louisiana Derby Day, and so much fun that they, you know, they draw that card a week out so you can really chew on it, and came up very good. The Derby and the Oaks and everything else, the Munis and the New Orleans Stake and little Louisiana, you know, the Louisiana Crescent stakes and so forth. So Amos later and more. All right. I got a couple other loose, probably slip Tom Ventura in too at some point from OBS. I really quickly, as Casey reaches for Nick Luck, it was Oaklawn that set the schedule on Saturday. The Fox broadcast absolutely wanted the Rebel within the body of the broadcast. But Oaklawn, the way they had the card laid out, they wanted the Rebel as the feature, the 11th of 12. And that's how it unfolded. It wasn't Fox's choice. It wasn't Naira's choice. It wasn't I've never seen anything like it. Like it's some it's an incredible insult to what are you talking about? It's crazed. I mean I just shook my head, and it was discussed all week long, by the way. All week long in Ireland and in the UK and here and everywhere, that chasing and hurdling is appreciated. And Cheltenham will be discussed. And what a perfect way to kick off Cheltenham than with a visit from Nick Luck. Nick, good afternoon.
Hi there, Steve.
Nick, there's a couple of stories. In fact, even before we talk about the races and the schedule this week, the biggest stories seem to be horses that, you know, have been declared out of races, including this morning, Nicky Henderson, Altior, out of the Champions Chase.
Oh, star-crossed Altior. Yeah, it's an irony, really, that he is a horse who, in his first 4 or 5 seasons racing, never really missed a beat and turned up every time he was asked to and invariably won. And in the last 2 years, they could barely get him on a track. And there's never been a massive issue. It's always been a sequence of minor problems. And most recently, he's coughed this morning. They've scoped him, and he's returned a dirty scope, which is obviously enough of a reason not to run him in a championship race. He hasn't been seen since Christmas time. So he's out. He was an 11th hour withdrawal from the race last year for different reasons. He had a foot problem last year. He'd been taken out of the Grade 1 Tingle Creek Chase at Sandown for varying reasons. Once because of unfortunately soft ground, another time because, again, he had a minor problem. So, yeah, they just haven't got him on a racetrack at all, really, to any great degree the last couple of years. I'm just hoping he's 11 now. I'm hoping they can get him out at least once or twice before the end of the season. But it robs the race of significant interest, and it's a shame. But these things do happen. The run up to Cheltenham, you know, the best steeple chasers and hurdlers in England and Ireland, being put through their paces and their final pieces of work, you often get one or two just fall by the wayside. We've had a little spate in the last couple of days of unusually high profile horses out. Tyne Hill, who's one of the leading fancies for the Stoyer Hurdle, he's not going to run, but he's okay. He'll probably run in a couple of weeks' time. Just a muscular issue with him. And an Eggman, who looked a very exciting chaser for Willie Mullins in the Arkle. He doesn't run either, but these things happen, and there are going to be more minor problems and injuries with horses of this nature than there are perhaps of others. So it's something we've come to expect, but it never makes it any less disappointing. On a wider point, some of the championship races, particularly the novice championship races, have run up light this year. They're short fields, and there's a whole myriad of reasons for that, but clearly the unusual circumstances, COVID, behind closed doors racing, lack of social runners, that they all come into play.
Well, there still will be no shortage of drama and terrific competition, and as always, there'll be some big prices that'll invade these decisions. It's very much an intense period with the group ones that are stacked on top of each other day after day. Maybe work back from the Gold Cup and talk about some of the standards that are going to be most anticipated.
Oh, right. Well, I mean, do you want me to start tomorrow, or do you want me to start
Let's walk through. Let's start with tomorrow, and of course the Champion and the Arkel you mentioned, the Group Ones. Start with tomorrow, and we'll go through the 4 days.
All right. Well, tomorrow the feature race is the Unibet Champion Hurdle. So this is the elite test for speed hurdlers, 2 miles minimum distance over hurdle. The surface has taken a wash the last day or so. We thought it was going to be nice, good ground, but 10 mils of rain overnight, so it's going to be on the softer side tomorrow. Really, it's a question of whether the two mares in the race, Epatant, last year's winner, and Honeysuckle can dominate in receipt of the £7 mare's allowance. Honeysuckle's never been beaten. Epatant, as I say, was last year's winner. Honeysuckle, winner of the Irish Champion Hurdle twice. She will have the ground in her favour, and I can certainly see her running a bold race. I think both of them will struggle to beat Goshen if he's on a going day. He's the horse who famously came to grief at the final flight of hurdles last year when 10 lengths clear in the Triumph Hurdle. He looked freakishly good at Wincanton last time. I think he might be able to boss this field. You're either with or against. He's probably an all boss type of horse, but I think he could just boss this field. Goshen in the Champion Hurdle. The other two grade ones tomorrow, well, one of them is the Arkle Chase. That's the big race for novice chases over the bigger obstacles. Very exciting horse of Nicky Henderson's called Fishkin. Again, he's never been beaten when he stood up. He won the Supreme Novices Hurdle last year at this fixture. His main danger, the horse I mentioned earlier on, Enair Gumen, is out of the race. So it should be plain sailing for Fishkin. One of the bigger price I think could run well is Captain Guinness, who was brought down at the fixture last year when going well in Shishkin's race. He's been second and fallen behind Enair Gumen the last twice. But I think if he gets his jumping together, he's a really interesting rival. And the Supreme Novices Hurdle opens up the card. Very small field for this smallest ever field. Just 8 runners go to post. You know, I remember the days when you get 25 or 30 in this. Just 8 going to post. Short price, Willie Mullins, favourite in the opener. That's what we've become accustomed to now at the Cheltenham Festival. Appreciate it. But whether he can be as effective over this shorter distance of 2 miles tomorrow, relatively sharp test for him. I'm not convinced he'll be able to boss this field as easily as he did the one in Ireland last time. And I think the horse who he beat, Bally Adam, could get a lot closer with another run under his belt. Bally Adam, of course, was one of the horses that was trained by Gordon Elliott. And, of course, you and I spoke about this last week. He's now moved to Henry de Bromhead. I think he might be giving Cheesley Park stud a winner in the opening race tomorrow. So they're the three grade ones tomorrow, Steve. Wednesday is Altiel, the race that Altiel has been withdrawn from, the Queen Mother Champion Chase. Now, Jacques Courtois, again, another Mullins runner, he missed the race last year. He was withdrawn on the morning of the race. Let's hope he makes it this time because he's got clearly the best form. He is odds on, however. Last year's winner, Politico, probably represents a little bit of value if anything goes wrong with Jacques Courtois or if he doesn't like the track. That would be the only mild question mark. He's never run here before. And I think he might be the one to take advantage if anything befalls Chacun Pour Soi. The other grade ones on Wednesday, the Brown Advisory Chase, used to be known as the RFA Chase. Monkfish, again, looks dominant. Mullins could have an amazing day Wednesday. He's got a market leader in just about every race. He looks a dominant force. If you want to play against him in that race, maybe the big breakaway would be the one to take advantage. But Monkfish looks a very exciting prospect. He'll be a Gold Cup horse next year. And in the big race for young hurdlers on Wednesday, I wouldn't be at all surprised to see Brave Man's Game prove best here for Paul Nicholls. I think he might be better than the Irish horses in that race. Thursday, the Grade 1 features of the Ryanair Chase. That's the big championship intermediate steeplechase over 2.5 miles. Really open look to it. They're bet 5-1 the field at the moment. The horse I like is Imperial Aura, trained by Kim Bailey. He was a winner at the festival last year. He's been progressive. He had a little blip just after Christmas there where he unseated his rider at the second fence at Kempton, but that was more of an aberration than any kind of weakness in his jumping technique, and I think he'll be fine here. He's won really well at a few festivals, so Imperial Aura would be my pick there, I think, narrowly in what's a very open race. Deus Hurdle, as a winner 2 years ago, Paisley Park. He was very, very disappointing in the race last year when he was found to have a fibrillating heart, but as soon as he's got over that issue, he's back to his best this year. He's definitely the one to beat with his main rival Time Hill having come out last week. And on Friday, obviously, we've got the Gold Cup, the feature race. I'm a massive fan of Absolute Star, Henry de Bromhead and Rachel Blackmore. Rachel Blackmore could complete a notable double this week. She's on the favourite in the Champion Hurdle, Honeysuckle. She's on the second favourite, the third favourite in the Gold Cup, Absolutar. The idea that you'd have a female rider with the potential to have a Champion Hurdle Gold Cup double at Cheltenham 4 or 5 years ago was pretty much unthinkable, but we've mentioned this before, and we've said it a number of times. The sport does seem to have come quite a significant way in this regard, and Rachel's a brilliant jockey, and yeah, she'd be second favourite probably to be leading rider of the week. She's got such a strong book of rides. So I like her chance in the Gold Cup on Absolutar. I absolutely love this horse. I think the extra distance is what he wants, and a little bit of juice in the ground won't be a problem for him either. So he'd be my pick for that race. The other big grade ones on Friday, short field again for the Triumph Hurdle for four-year-olds, the young hurdlers. Zanna here is the percentage call there. And in the Albert Bartlett, the long race, the novice hurdler, 3 miles. There's a horse called Vanilla, who is about a 33-to-1 shot. He'd be about the biggest price horse in any championship race I'd be looking to tip up this week.
Run him again in the that's in
that's yeah. In the you same put your ears up there when I said 33-to-1, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I'm following along and making little highlights on off the odds checker pages, and
Vanilla, Vanillier in the Albert Bartlett novice hurdle on Friday. His trainer was on the podcast last week, and he gave him quite a big shout. And the trainer knows what he's doing. He's won a Champion Hurdle before, and he's not really one to kind of shout about his horses. He wouldn't be a wild optimist. And it's got that kind of look to it. It's a bit of a crapshoot, this race. I think it's not. I don't think the front of the market is massively strong. No one really knows what's going to win. They're all horses that are progressing at variable rates, and yeah, anything could really happen.
Well, and I'm just looking at the market in the Albert Bartlett. And you've got basically five horses between 9-to-2 and 8-to-1 in the shops. So that gives you an indication. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of chalk, as you would say, this week.
Yeah.
There really is. People have talked about sort of dilution of quality over the years and too many opportunities. I think that's going to be that. I've always railed against that accusation. So I thought there was just the right amount of opportunities for the right of that amount of horses. But if you believe that to be the case, then it's going to be exacerbated this year because, as I say, people aren't running horses unless they think they've got a real shot. So everything's just a little bit more distilled. So there are quite a few fairly skinny odds on shots that you're trying to make a case for getting beaten, but it's quite hard to get quite a few of them beaten.
Nick, how about tomorrow? I want to ask you about the National Hunt as well, the amateur riders, the novice race that has got a pretty good history of producing prices.
Well, yeah, it is, but of course, it's a different race now because last year was the first year that the distance had been reduced because it used to be run over 4 miles, and that was what was part of the charm of the race. But after a few issues a couple of years ago with a really attritional race in which there were a lot of fallers and it was kind of an ugly spectacle, they decided to take the distance back down to 3¾ miles, which you think, okay, well, what's a couple of furlongs between friends? But it did actually fundamentally change the type of horse that was running in it, because while they've done that, it's a race for novices anyway, so they can't have won a steeplechase before the beginning of this season, even though they could have been a high-class hurdler. And also, it was a race for amateur riders. Well, it's no longer a race for amateur riders, because amateurs can't compete at the Cheltenham Festival this year because they are not classified as elite sports people under the COVID regulations. So the three races at the Cheltenham Festival restricted to unpaid riders are now open to, well, now have been ridden by your everyday pros. So they do change the nature of the races. They're going to go steadier. And the 3-mile 6 with professional riders is not the same as 4 miles with amateur riders. It's going to be nowhere near as attritional a race. The quality of horse in it is a bit better. All it's become really now is the second division of the 3-mile novice chase that takes place on Wednesday. There's really not that much of a discrepancy between the two. So it's sort of become a slightly pointless race tomorrow, really. But I do think the favourite, I think the favourite will just win. I think Galvin will win. He's been laid out for the race ever since he won here in October. They haven't deviated from that plan. His dam won a 3.5-mile chase, so his pedigree suggests he should stay okay. I think he's the likeliest winner of that.
Any idea for the race that precedes that? The Boodles Juvenile looks like a bulky field and doesn't look like there's any, you know, stern favorite.
Well, at least if I say Joseph O'Brien, or everyone who's listening will know who I'm talking about. So I think he might win this with Buckleton. He's won the race before as a trainer, and I think he could win it again. I think this horse has been let in quite lightly by the British handicapper, and I think he ought to be carrying more weight than he's carrying. Buckleton. He was third in a grade one behind Calixios last time. He's been second to Zanna here in a graded race. They're both leading fancies for the Triumph Hurdle on Friday. If you think they're as good as everyone says they are, then Buckleton's a well-handicapped horse tomorrow. And they put some headgear on him as well, which I think will help him.
Well, other than that, Nick, I mean, I'm looking at that Concertista in the Mayor's Hurdle. Looks like a short price winner.
Well, Concertista's by the same sire as Enable, funnily enough. Concertista's by Nathaniel. Nathaniel, who, in addition to being the sire of Enable, has now shown himself to be an extremely smart sire of top-class jump horses, particularly fillies. And Concertista won the Phillies Novice race here last year by half the track, and she's favourite again. On ratings, though, she's not quite as far clear as the market suggests, and she'd be one shorty that I'd be looking to have a crack at, just because I think I've got a few running for me. Certainly Roxana, who won the race 2 years ago, is interesting, though she might want a bit further to be seen at her very best. I would say Black Tears is a mare that I think will go well here. I think jockey Jack Kennedy, is going to have a very good week. And Black Tears ran well here at Cheltenham last year in the Coral Cup. She's one of those, she needs a bit of a Balls of Steel ride. She wants to be produced very late, but she's got the right man on board to try and execute those tactics.
Well, it's been a favorite, undoubtedly, for, certain American players. Steve Anderson is going to be particularly, again, disappointed not to be able to attend. I mean, there's certain people, Sean Clancy, that go over every year. So this is one of the top stands of any kind of equine sport in the world. What's the coverage, Nick? Are you going to be able to bang out podcasts during the week?
Yeah, that's the idea, Steve. I mean, I arrived here at Cheltenham first thing this morning, and, you know, it feels like the day before Cheltenham. You know, it's exactly the same kind of bustle and, you know, TV crews and contractors and last-minute preparations, a few jocks walking the course, a few Irish horses out. But, unfortunately, tomorrow is also going to feel like the day before Cheltenham, because, of course, it's not going to feel any different. And I think this is going to be the weirdest behind closed doors event that I've attended. And I was at Breeders' Cup, and obviously we know that there were smattering of people there. But I was at Ascot last year when there was absolutely nobody there. And that was odd. This is going to be stranger. And I think one of the reasons it's going to be stranger is because, obviously, when behind closed doors racing first started, we were simply just grateful for it to be on. Now we've had nearly a year of it. We're kind of sort of, the novelty wearing off, and people are desperate to get proper crowds back on a racetrack. And this fixture, more than any other anywhere I've been, with the possible exception of the Kentucky Derby, is just, the crowd is everything. You know, the crowd is absolutely everything. Yeah, and every single person here who comes to Cheltenham is here for the racing. You know, it's the most dedicated, passionate, vibrant, loud crowd you'd find just about anywhere, and the roar that accompanies the horses when the tapes go up for the first race is a thing of racing folklore, and it will be very, very odd. Really will. There's a natural anti-theatrical quality about the whole place. It is all about the spectator, and it will feel strange. So though the racing is very, very good, and for a television audience, it'll probably feel okay.
Well, we're going to take the feed and highlight some of the the biggest events this week. It's become one of our favorites, too. And, Nick, as always, appreciate the opportunity to kick off Cheltenham Week with you.
Yeah, always a pleasure. Thanks.
Nick Luck, everybody, and not to be missed. And if you're not following Nick Luck on Twitter, I'd be very, very surprised. And if you aren't, go ahead and make sure you follow. And Nick's got his Monday through Friday, you know, typically about an hour podcast, and you know, hitting all the rip from today's headlines kind of coverage. And certainly all week, Cheltenham. We'll talk after Kenny McPeak joins us. Kenny's on his way to OBS. And after Kenny, we'll talk a little bit more, and we'll get Tuesday, Wednesday plays from the long shot lad himself, Kev Humphrey, somebody else who's going to be missing, although he's, you know, he's living in Singapore, so it's not like it used to be for him traveling to Cheltenham, but we'll get Kev Humphrey's pushes for the first 2 days of Cheltenham in a little bit after Kenny McPeak joins us, and he joins us now. Kenny, congratulations, Swiss skydiver, comes back and really kicks off the year in style.
Yeah, she's some kind of special, you know. Real fortunate to be around a filly like that. We've just been having a ton of fun with her.
You could tell, you know, Mike Welch, with each of her increasingly intense works, you were kind of battening down the hatch. You know, you put her on a plane, it doesn't matter where you go with her, and, you know, this opportunity to kick off the year in a grade one, pretty irresistible. Talk about what's gone on since November, since the Breeders' Cup, a little bit of a disappointment after the bad start, but clearly that's... you know, one you put a line through.
Yeah, you know, I was a little reluctant to start her out in the grade one, but, you know, she needed a run against fillies and mares. She's obviously out of conditions, and there weren't any options in South Florida, unfortunately, or we probably would have stayed there. But she travels well, and she's on her way back right now. She should be back at Gulfstream by 4 or 5 o'clock tonight, and, we'll get her in a little routine and figure out a plan.
How has she changed, if at all, from November till now?
Well, I think she's bigger and stronger, which she was going to need to be to get to the next level. But she's a really stout filly. And we gave her a couple of months off last fall and into the winter. And she's filled out and still beautiful. Like a new copper penny or coach. She's so healthy, and knock wood, we can keep it that way. I mean, she continues to, what I call, drill the feed tub, and just makes our job really easy.
This opportunity, and, you know, given the kind of campaign she had last year, 10 starts on the way to the championship and the 5 wins and, you know, competitive at at the highest level, wins an American Classic, wins at a mile and a quarter, mile and 3/16. What kind of a campaign is rattling around when you and Peter talk about what you want to get done this year?
Well, obviously we'd like to get her to the Breeders' Cup in the fall, whether it's the Distaff or the Classic. You know, we're tinkering with a couple ideas. Royal Ascot's reached out about possibility of her coming there. Well, I'm run her on the grass, so I don't really know. Although I've breezed her on the grass before, and she bullet worked doing that. So, you know, that might be in the cards. Let's see. But more than anything, we'll do like we did last year. We'll let her tell us, and we'll nominate her to all the right spots. And when the race is, you know, and her, when she's right and ready and the race is there, we'll go. And, you know, I suspect she'll be doing quite a bit of traveling this year, too, if all goes as planned.
It's funny. We just got on the phone with Nick Luck, and you mentioned Ascot. And, you know, she's out of a Johannesburg mare. Daredevil himself was by more than ready. So there's no shortage of... you know, of paper when it comes to the grass, actually, for her. I mean, given her success and given your penchant for trying exciting and ambitious things. I'm not entirely surprised to hear Ascot offered up as a consideration.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It'll have to all come together. But right now, is it a long shot that we go there? Probably. Ascot's run right-handed. And so that's another, I guess you could say, obstacle. Because she's been going left-handed. And we've got her into a nice two-turn rhythm. She's not a filly that's, I think she'd figure it out real fast. But, I don't know, same thing. Let's see and see if something takes us that direction. We've got some short-term ideas right now. We'll nominate her to the obvious ones, the Apple Blossom and the La Troyenne, and figure out which one suits best. I'm already being pulled by both outfits to go their way, and we'll see.
Well, the potential for an Apple Blossom early season showdown with Monomoy Girl and more I think that's got people. I know it's got people talking because that was one of the first things that came out minutes after the Beholder win.
Yeah, and we'd also like to. I wouldn't mind running against She Dares the Devil again either. I think we had the better horse in Oaks, and the trip didn't unfold for us. But so all those matchups are great, and it's a little early to figure out how it all falls in place. But it could happen.
Kenny, given what I just mentioned, what happened and the discussions minutes after the race, and I'm not one to look to stir up trouble and controversy, but Robbie Alvarado with a kind of a thoughtless comment after the race yesterday when asked about going to the stick. Any reaction to what really put off a number of observers and fans?
I didn't hear this. Obviously, we were at the races, so I didn't watch any of the telecasts. So I can't tell you anything about that. I think Robbie's in a good place right now. He's been hurt a couple of times in the last couple of years. And the things that happened in the past, I mean, that's the past. He would admit he was in a dysfunctional relationship, and there are a lot of people in this world that get in those. And, when that happens, obviously something's got to break. And, he went through that, and he's got a wonderful wife and two beautiful kids right now, and he's, of course, got his older kids, and there's plenty of people in the world that go through these things. So I don't think there was any intention if for whatever he said hurt people's feelings. I mean, at some point we've got to think, okay, enough of that. And is it, are people perfect? Of course not. I'm not, you're not, and obviously he's not. So, but listen, he's a great talent on a horse. Got a lot of confidence when I put him on a horse. It gives me great feedback. He hasn't been riding a lot of top horses lately, and that's more of a reflection of his agent passed away years ago, Lenny Pike, which was they were a really good team, and I think he's had a hard time finding the right rhythm with the right agent and the right circumstances. But when you put him on horseback, he knows what to do, and he's just one of those Cajun riders that, I mean, I've always had so much luck with him over the years. I rode DeSormo. I mean, Kent DeSormo's had his own issues. Look, they're jockeys. I mean, they're not politicians. They're not expected to have a certain high standard of whatever people expect. But as far as a horseman, there's not many better than him. He's won 5,000 races. I mean, what else can you say?
No, I appreciate the addressing. I absolutely needed to mention it. Let's get back to the Oval, and we'll certainly look forward to however the season continues on from the Beholder win. Let's touch on a couple of others, Kenny, too, before I ask you about the sale. Envoûtante, give us some thoughts about the way the Azaria unfolded.
Well, I think I should have put a little stiffer work into her. I think she gets beat, what, a length and a half, 2 lengths max, and she got tired late, and my staff reported back that she drank a full bucket of water and needed the race. And she's, believe me, it's a really good filly, and, you know, for whatever reason, we've got to regroup. And like I said, I think if I'd put a little stiffer work into her, I think I might have got it done with her. She didn't get beat much, and she's high-level talent. You'll probably see her. You may see her in the Apple Blossom, or you may see her in the La Troyenne. We'll see.
Well, and she, you know, make no mistake, she was chasing the winner. She dares the devil. And, in fact, I would think that if Latruska had actually gotten past She Dares the Devil, En Vutante testing her, would have been, you know, part of the postscript.
Well, like I said, she's a filly that takes a little more finesse than Swiss Skydiver in that she's a big lanky filly, and I'm going to say that I'm not quite as hard. I mean, she doesn't take the works quite as well. I mean, in that Swiss, the harder you work her, the more she eats, the faster she eats, the stronger she gets. En Vutante's more of a filly that needs spacing a little bit better.
Sure.
Spacing of her works. She needs, and like I said, I think I could have made a case to work her one more time. And I think I could have made up a couple of lengths. With the race under her belt, but we'll move on, and I think you'll see before the end of the year she'll put herself in the mix in a lot of big important events.
Well, you know, it's interesting because the handicap division is kind of amorphic right now, and you know, is trying to find some definition. But the fillies and mares, there's no question that I think they're the engine on the train when it comes to the older divisions right now.
Yeah, well, people have been tagging me, telling me to try Swiss against Colts, too. So
yeah, enough of that.
I don't know if I'm going there yet, but you never know. I mean, maybe on paper the division she fits, and Indy's a great problem to have. So we'll see how it goes.
A couple of things about the younger fillies, too. Let me slip in a question about Crazy Beautiful out of that Devona Dale where, the big-priced winner caught everybody flat-footed, that whole Bodemeister. But Crazy Beautiful was making up some ground late and probably got a lot out of that.
Yeah, she galloped out in front in that group. And we didn't feel like she was but about 85% ready for that race either. And she still ran really well. And I'm leaning towards the Beaumont with her. I think that's a good next spot for her. I'm not going to rule out some of these others. I will nominate her to the Gulfstream Park Oaks and the Ashland, but I'm not convinced she wants to go quite that far. I think her best distance is one turn. And you know, it's a hate to kind of pigeonhole her like that, but I do think that's a better spot for her, so we'll see how that goes. The Ashland's a little further, and then I got Simply Ravishing, which right now I'm planning on the Gulfstream Park Oaks, and that's a freaky talented filly. She's shown she's a little bit better than Crazy Beautiful at this stage, and we've had her on ice for a long time, but she's gonna show them some really special stuff when she gets ready and when she's running.
You know, speaking of three-year-old fillies, and you got a hatful of them, you got aggressive, and I don't blame you with Forever Boss, who broke the maiden and then up popped that Florida Oaks opportunity, and you took a swing. What's your postscript to that?
Well, I think anytime you get a filly that breaks her maiden special way, whether it's a two-year-old or a three-year-old, I think the smart thing to do is hunt black type because, I mean, and I'm not one to sit around and worry about my percentages. I think that you've got to figure out how good they are, and the sooner you know, the better. She drew outside in Tampa. She got hung wide and wide both turns. She didn't get beat. I think she got beat 6.5 or 7 lengths. And she needs to obviously be a better horse than that, but she was compromised. And her next start's likely going to be the Bourbonette up at Turfway, which I think is another good spot, which is synthetic and similar to grass plays anyway. But she's, you know, she's a nice filly, and she's done everything right. And even that that effort wasn't terrible. It could have been better, but it could have been a lot worse, too.
Another three-year-old filly that I the minute her name popped up, I knew it was Lee Pacoy's homebred, that Candy Ride filly, Tabor Hall. And, took a while to break her maiden, and then you took a shot in the Honey Bee. It feels like she's going somewhere, that filly.
Well, she didn't run well in the Honey Bee, and she backed up. Although every horse I ran over there backed up a little bit. I don't know if it was the surface or shipping in or what, but the next spot with her will probably be a Never One Two allowance race at Keeneland, and you know, get her back in a little easier spot. And if she were to win that, then we'll get a little more ambitious. But she's been really solid. That filly, very professional, and I like her two turns as well. She might have got a little tired in that race at Oaklawn.
Well, and coming up on Saturday, the Fairgrounds Oaks, and gotta ask you about the horse that is fairly new to the barn, ran in the Suncoast, Il Milocchio, and this is a super speedy, an Ontario bred. Martin Drexler had her as a 2-year-old, and she had a nice season actually up at Woodbine, and had a dirt debut, ran kind of evenly at Tampa. She's going to come in and be a price on Saturday in the Fairgrounds Oaks.
You know, this filly is a complete professional. She's really easy to be around. I think she's on the improve. She's going to have to be because the race came up really tough. It's not a big field, but it looks like there's, you know, everybody in there looks like they've run well recently. And I do think that might be a key race for the Kentucky Oaks, but she does everything right, and she's it's not a pedigree that I was familiar with when I got her, and she came in great shape. I'm not familiar with the trainer out of Canada, but he's done a good job with her, and she's a classy filly, and I think you're going to see her, you know, perhaps find her way in the mix. And this is a key race. We've got her 100% ready. She's ready to fire a big shot, but like I said, she's going to have to find another gear to know that she fits in Kentucky Oaks types.
Il Milocchio in the Fairground Oaks, and Brian Hernandez Jr. aboard. We'll talk to Tom Amos in about an hour and change, and Tom involved as well with Lil Tootsie, a Tapitcher filly. And Kenny, you're on your way to OBS, the first of the 2-year-old in training sale season events, and the next 2 days. Talk a little bit about your early thoughts here, and nobody combs the aisles and finds bargains like you do. What are you looking toward tomorrow and Wednesday?
Well, I've got Dominic Brennan, my main guy, who helps run our babies and take care of our babies in Silverleaf, the training center I've got there in Ocala, and he's doing some short list work, and he's going to have some horses for me to look at later today and tomorrow. And I'm not a big 2-year-old in training guy, to be honest. I really like the yearlings. And, a lot of these horses we've already seen and we'll have notes on from last fall. And I do have a couple clients that want me to check some things out, and I've got a budget. And it's not a massive one, but it's a modest one. But we're going to see if we can pluck something out of there. I bought Forever Boss out of this sale up there. She wasn't expensive. She was out in the back barn, but we'll pick through them and see if we come up with anything. I don't know that we need any more young horses because we bought pretty strong in the fall sales last year, and we'll see how it unfolds. I always enjoy going though.
Well, and yeah, good place to press the flesh and circulate. Got to ask about going back to the fall. You mentioned the yearling season. Which of the first crop stallions that have these new 2-year-olds? Who are you tracking closely?
Well, I'm a big Unified fan. I bought 6 Unifieds at auction. I just thought
that.
Very unusual too. For whatever reason, that I gravitated to him. That stallion's pretty impressive with the hippies putting on a horse and the balance. He's a Candy Ride line. I do think Candy Ride's the next obvious line that maybe displaces Tappet over time. you know, between Gun Runners and obviously Unified and Candy Ride himself still plugging along, puts a certain amount of speed in them. And I don't know if I'd call it an outcross because it really is a Mr. Prospector line, but it's, you know, this horse Unified is pretty impressive.
Interesting. There's any number, and we'll touch on them. We'll probably talk later with Tom Ventura, too. But I do want to check in with everybody as the two-year-old season, sale season gets going, with, of course, Gulfstream after this at the end of the month, following the Florida Derby. And one of the other stories, Kenny, of course, you and Brad Cox are pretty much responsible for Daredevil making his way back to North America. I do see that there's four Daredevils in the sale.
Yeah, and I've got a few young ones coming in by him. Some people have decided to send me some of the Daredevil fillies. So it's hard to strike lightning twice in the same place, though. So back when I had Tejano Run, everybody wanted to send me all the Tejanos. it didn't always work out. But anyway, you know, we'll do our best with whatever comes in. But yeah, it'd be interesting. Daredevil, Laoban, you know, there's people that are optimistic that he's going to have a big shot, although I think he had a small crop, his last crop. But anytime you can find a stallion or its offspring before the market hits. I bought one of the first Tappet Stakes winners, and before he hit, I bought her for $40,000. And those kind of opportunities disappear when the stallions become popular, and then everybody jumps on the bandwagon.
Exactly. Well, the Daredevil story, pretty amazing, and Swiss Skydiver, she was really the one that got the ball rolling. And again, this weekend, between her and She Dares the Devil, Daredevil making the mark. And these two it's an amazing story. Usually, Kenny, when they head overseas, they don't come back until they maybe retire as stallions. So this is a story that'll, you know, write its own script. Kenny McPeak, good luck the next couple of days, and well done getting Swiss Skydiver off and running, a 101 buyer too, and pretty much, you know, from a performance level evaluation, picks up where she left off as a 3-year-old.
Right. All right. Let me get back on the road.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Kenny McPeak, everybody, on his way to OBS. We'll get some other OBS conversation in later, including probably a Tom Ventura visit. Actually, I haven't heard back from Tom, but usually he can get, he's, you know, out there walking the grounds. Let's take the timeout here, Case, okay? And we'll come back. We'll get Kev Humphreys in, and we'll get Kev's Cheltenham pushes for tomorrow and Wednesday, so you'll be halfway in. Then we'll check back with him on Wednesday for Thursday and Friday. The long shot lad, Rich Migliori, as well, to follow Kev. And I mentioned Tom Amos. We'll probably reach for Baffert in the last half hour as well, and talk about, haven't even discussed it yet, concert tour. Basically, Joel Rosario, to me, was a big part of the difference, because he quarter horsed it out with Concert Tour and the Rebel, and Giroux kind of eased off, and that may have been all it took. So, Concert Tour, moderate, you know, takes actually I think paired up to the San Vicente win with a 94 buyer. He's gonna have to keep going. Hozier, actually, the other Baffert that he told you about last week was going. Hozier got second, but frankly, he got lucky to be second. Let's be frank. Big Lake, Cattle River was stopping in front of Big Lake, and it cost Big Lake second. So, it seemed to me that this was you know, for a race that we sort of had a certain anticipation for, this wasn't as splashy as the potential seemed to indicate. But plenty of other nice performances to talk about out of the Oaklawn. The other thing to talk about with Baffert, too, triple tap. Jane Lyon gets her baby, her Farrell sibling, off to a solid start. Solid start. Let's take a break here. Come back. Kev Humphrey is going to join us. Rich Migliori and more.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and about 7 or 8 minutes to the top of the hour. Rich Migliori will join us in just a little bit. Part two of the Cheltenham Week visits coming now. And Nick Luck, earlier and now, your man, the long shot lad himself. I'm sure he's despondent over he could, even if he was back in the UK, he couldn't go to Cheltenham this week anyway. So maybe next year he can coordinate a trip back. And Kev Humphreys joins us, and I think there's going to be a little delay on the line, so we'll make it work. Kev, how you doing?
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, listeners. How is everything?
Excellent, excellent, and looking forward to the next 4 days. And as I'm sure you are as well, this is this is one of your absolute favorite spots.
It's really the bread and butter of horse racing, particularly for Irish people. Even though it's in the UK, I think everybody in Ireland certainly knows Cheltenham's on this week. People who don't have a huge interest in racing will have a few bets on and will have an interest on in the racing. And particularly, I think this year, with such a strong lineup from Ireland, there'll be plenty of interest. And yeah, it's a little disappointing that I won't be able to make the trek over. I think usually this time of the day on a Monday, I'm usually at Dublin Airport ready to board a flight to Birmingham. With thousands of other Cheltenham goers as well, and it's usually you usually have some great conversation with, you know, strangers talking about certain horses they fancy and so on. So it's just a really good atmosphere. And I think as well, you know, on the Monday before Cheltenham, you know, no opinion is too outlandish. Like, there's nothing, you haven't got anything wrong just yet. So everything, you're going to have to take everything on board. By maybe 5 o'clock on the Tuesday, some of your hopes and dreams may have been dashed. But it's a great time to, in the, you know, it's just like the final day before the big roar of 1:20 UK time for the Supreme Novice.
Well, and that kicks things off. We'll talk about the Tuesday action and the Wednesday, and then on Wednesday we'll reconnect and look at some results, maybe listen to a race together, and then we'll handicap Thursday and Friday. And one of the themes that Nick Luck seemed to strike on, Kev, was fairly short odds favorites and some smallish fields that you know, don't necessarily portend for, you know, for big balloons. You're certainly going to still try to either match up some prices with favorites, or if there are some stabs to be had. Let's talk about tomorrow's card and run through the sequence, and you know, highlight your likely winners and the best prices to play with.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I echo what Nick mentioned. Like, I think when the entries came out, so we have 48-hour declarations. So I think, yeah, say today's declaration for Wednesday. And I think a lot of the novice races just were, you know, 6, 7, 8 runner fields that you know, with a clear favourite. And I think, you know, in the UK and Ireland, a lot of bookmakers would offer, you know, especially if there's 16 runner races, even in championship fields, they might offer extra places, and that gives you maybe more incentive to find your 20-1 or higher that might just run into the places. Whereas, you know, you're struggling a little bit at times to find maybe a vulnerable favourite. But I think that just requires maybe a little bit more digging around and maybe looking through the race dynamics and so on to see, is there any very, very impressive in